Hello and welcome once again to In Their Shoes. My name is Vanessa Coleman and today my guest, as promised, is Chrissy. Chrissy Smith is the fiancée of last week's guest, Kerin Webb. And Chrissy is also a psychic medium and a counsellor and psychotherapist. That's right then, Chrissy?
Hello, Vanessa. Yes, that's correct.
And yeah. Welcome. So tell us a little bit about you and your life and obviously how you came to meet Kerin.
Well, Kerin and my situation came about through counselling, really, and our friendship developed through that. And when we both got divorced, we...
How long ago was this?
Gosh. About a year and I can't remember the last year. and our relationship developed after we both got divorced. And
how long have you had? Did you know Kerin much before then?
Yeah, 2 years before then.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'd met through professional circumstances, and found we had a really good connection.
Yeah. Great, yeah. Well, all I can say to the listeners is she's got a glowing look to her eyes when she speaks about Kerin. So, you know, love is in the air.
It certainly is.
So tell us a bit about your life. And
Well, what I really would like to talk about is my physical condition, my disability that I was born with.
Well, I have to say that, once again, the listener can't see you, but if they have a look on Radio Free's blog, there will be shortly a picture. But you look wonderful.
Thank you.
So what kind of disability?
Well, it is a hidden disability, and I think that there are many, thousands, hundreds, millions of people with hidden disabilities that they go unnoticed. And
are we talking physical or mental?
Physical, but with physical disabilities, I think people forget the mental issues that go with that too.
Oh, definitely.
I was born with an unusual, very rare condition, which they've yet to label. In 1968, I was born in Boscombe Hospital, which of course is no longer here. And I was rushed off to Great Ormond Street as they found that I didn't have an opening to my bowel. Its medical name is impertinent anus, or IA now, as it's now known.
I've never heard of that before.
No, you probably haven't. There's only about, since I've joined Facebook and the IA community, some wonderful person in Australia started the community up. I thought I was the only person
in the whole universe, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If the geneticists were right, I still would be. With this whole condition, because IA is only part of my condition. As we found 68 people so far around the world with IA.
Gosh.
Who've joined the face group club. But there are others that are new children that are being born with IA or a lot around the world. But what I'll explain is IA is only perhaps a part of a syndrome or association, medical association. But going back to 1968, when I was born, it was even more rare than it is today. And basically I was driven up to Great Ormond Street. My poor mother was still in Boscombe Hospital, not really understanding the whole situation. They phoned my father that night and said, I wasn't named then, but your daughter has to have an emergency operation on her bowel, but please be aware that she might die. She hasn't been named. We'd like to christen her. What should we call her? My poor father didn't know my name, didn't know what to call me. And the nurse actually called me Christina because I was born so close to Christmas, the 16th of December. So I was christened before the operation, which is apparently what they used to do in Great Ormond Street at the time. And I had this operation, which apparently if I'd have been born 10 years earlier, they wouldn't have known how to carry this procedure out. And I was saved, and that was wonderful. But I'm really one of the lucky ones, because What they didn't know at the time was when a child is born with IA, with no opening to the bowel, they really need to look at other things that could be also wrong with the child. In my case, they didn't know until I was 23 that I also had a tethered spinal cord.
A what?
A tethered spinal cord.
Tethered?
That's where the spinal cord is literally tied into your spinal column.
Gosh.
So for you, as you're growing older, as a normal person growing older, the nerve endings in your spine are like elastic. So yeah, as you grow older, they become more flexible and they'll stretch with you. But for somebody with a tethered spinal cord, they're like the nerve endings are like pieces of rope, and they start to fray as you get older. And you know, you can have operations to detether the spinal cord if you know that you've got a tethered spinal cord. But they didn't find that out with me until I was 40. So I lived for 40 years doing silly things that I should never have done if I'd have known I had a tethered spinal cord. But of course, now the medical world know that tethered spinal cords and bowel abnormalities are linked.
Yeah.
But in those days, there wasn't the link, so they didn't look for that. I also have two wombs and two vaginas. I also have an extra clavicle rib. I have finger-like thumbs, as you probably can see, and I'm lucky because I could have been born with no thumbs at all, apparently. One kidney, and maybe other things that they haven't discovered yet. Oh, and a spina bifida vertebrae. So if I'd have been born with a little tiny sac of water on in my vertebrae, if I'd have been born with my whole spinal column with these vertebrae, I would have had spina bifida, but there's no link to that with my condition.
What about, was there anything in the family before? And the reason I say this is because Elizabeth, my daughter, now is, I think, 36, I've got that right. And I'm, funny enough, I'm at the doctor's this week to take her because I have an awful feeling that she is getting ankylosing spondylitis, which is what her father had. And actually, his condition started when he was that age. I mean, I'd obviously hope that it would miss her, but... because I thought mainly it would be men seem to get it. But, you know, so obviously that was from her father. What about anything in your...
Well, the geneticists became interested in me when I wanted to become pregnant, which was the only time that they found...
And how old were you then?
24, 25. And that was the only time that they found out about my two wombs, the two vaginas and so on and so forth. And so the geneticists came at my door and they wanted to do various tests and so on and so forth. They took the family history of my mother and my father.
Yeah.
And to date, they can't find any reason why I was born the way I was. Definitely no links on either side of the family. They thought perhaps it might be genetic, which is why they were doing all the tests to see. And I wanted to know if I was going to have a child.
Yeah.
What's the chances of the child being worse than I am? Because,
yes,
as I was going to say, 1968, from 1968 to 1972, only 21 children were born with IA, with a bowel condition alone.
Yeah.
And out of those 21 children, only 4 survived, and I was one of those 4.
I'm just thinking, Chrissy, at this moment, I mean, it's a very... wow, it's a very moving story. But I suppose there's two ways you've got to look at it. That either you can feel very, very sorry for yourself, which is easily done, or you can feel that you're very special because you are, you know, there's not many of you out there. So
absolutely not. I do feel, and always have done, special. Not special as in how wonderful I am.
No.
But special in respect that... I feel that it's been a gift, the disabilities that I have as a gift.
Yeah.
And I have been very, very protected spiritually. I do feel that.
Yeah.
Because of various events. But the fact is that my condition that affects me probably the most is the IA, which is incontinence. So I've lived with incontinence for all of my life. And at the age of 9, when they casted me out of Great Ormond Street, because they keep a nice, very good eye on you up to the age of about 9 or 10, and then they say, that's it. You're out, you should be normal. Well, you're not.
That's such a young age, isn't it?
Absolutely. Oh. Of course, there was no backup or help. And basically, my mum, I always wanted to be normal because I was a child wanting to fit in, and I didn't fit in at all. I experienced lots of bullying because obviously children didn't,
very
you know,
cruel.
They could smell things on me. I didn't understand it, so I couldn't really explain it to them. Teachers didn't understand it. There wasn't the special needs sort of at school where, you know, there is today, where the children are looked after. In 1970s, it was basically you just get on with it. So I developed school phobia. I was bullied very badly. I had to have a year off school in between junior school and secondary
school.
How
did your mother cope with this?
Well, going back to Great Ormond Street days, I have to tell this in honour of my mum, this story.
Is your mother still with us?
Yes, she is.
Oh, good, good.
But it was, firstly, such a rare condition. She was the only person in Bournemouth, anyway, with a child with this condition. But when I was born, she came up to obviously see me as soon as possible after giving birth. Great Ormond Street in those days didn't allow parents to stay with their children, not even newborn babies. So she wasn't allowed to stay with me. At 18 months old, I had to have another operation, which was a colostomy operation, and they call it a pull-through to actually make my bowel normal, which it never is, but appear normal again. Again, she wasn't allowed to stay with me. And it actually, in those days, my mum said, you know, I'd go into hospital absolutely fine and come out of hospital. With infections and all sorts of things, which would make it even worse. And they really did not. Great Ormond Street in those days were not child centred. I don't think they did. They, in respect that they.
But I thought it was connection. I thought it was a child hospital.
I don't think they made the connection that the child knows the parent at that time.
Oh.
From a very early age, because now you're not separated. You stay with your child all the time.
Yeah.
But there was no help, no financial help, nothing for my mum. Absolutely nothing. I've always been told by the medical world I'm a dark horse.
Well, you've got dark hair.
I try to live up to the name. But in that way, there is no help. And you do feel special because no one around you has got those kinds of complications. And as a child, and growing up in our society, no one mentions incontinence. It is a rude word.
Yeah.
You don't talk about your bowels.
No.
And I still think that incontinence today has the same feeling about it that cancer had maybe 15 years ago, if not more.
Yeah.
It's the unspeakable. You don't talk about it. But you think about it, you come into the world with incontinence.
Yes.
You leave the world with incontinence.
Yeah.
Why do we not talk about it?
Yeah.
Why do we not understand that it's a hidden disability that will affect every single one of us?
Yeah.
In the end.
Yes.
And I have to fight for any kind of disability allowance or... I have to fight for any kind of recognition from the medical world at all for any of my procedures or anything, because it's so unspoken. That's the only thing I can say.
I really, listening to you, Chrissy, I cannot begin to imagine how you coped. How you got through it, the bullying thing, that would be terrible. I hate bullying. And for you not to understand all these things and to be growing up through this, I think it's a miracle that you are who you are today. I really do. So Karen mentioned that you were writing a book.
Yes, I finished the book.
Oh, you finished?
Now editing it for me because...
What's the title of your book?
Above Normal.
Above Normal, yes.
I do not believe there is any such thing as normal, but our society would like to.
Yeah. Well, as I've mentioned many times on this program about labels and things, you know, I just wish there weren't things as labels, because it does focus people's minds. They have a perception about something the same as disability. I mean, I feel blessed with Elizabeth, and when I'm humbled when I go to her club meetings or I go to the daycare centre and I see these people, and do you know what? 9 times out of 10, these people in wheelchairs and things, they're smiling. They're the happiest people. I mean, it's just, you know, we have to count our blessings, you know. With too many people, I think, that they focus on the things that are not really important. So tell us a little bit about your book, and how have you found, obviously, talking one author to another, I mean, I found it very, very difficult, the discipline, and, you know, especially when one of my friends, I think she was a friend, when she said, "Do you think anybody will bother to read your book, Vanessa?" And I said, "Well, I hope so, but having said that, the fact is that just writing, even for yourself, to get it out there, the accomplishment is the best feeling ever. That's all I can say. Having finished the book, I mean, I don't know how you felt when you'd finished your book.
Yes, that's exactly right, Vanessa, absolutely. I started this book because it's a bit of a story in that I was, for the first time ever, about 3 years ago, I actually asked for help from the medical world to do with my incontinence, because I've dealt with it myself. And this wonderful colonologist, Dr. Clark from Poole, actually spoke to me as a woman, not a number, which I was very grateful for. But I was given, in hospital, this sheet with lots of questions about my incontinence and the level of incontinence. And there were about 30 questions on this sheet, and I sat there. They asked me to fill it out before I went to see the specialist. So I sat there reading through these questions, and I was thinking, do you know what? If I'd have had this list of questions when I was 20, they could have helped me. But actually, at 44, what's the point? I've dealt with these questions, and the way I've dealt with them, and the way I learn to deal with things, is to step out of that victim mindset. Because when anyone, I think, has a disability of any kind, and that could be emotional, mental, physical, we immediately start to think of ourselves as a victim. And there's like a power struggle that goes on within ourselves.
Well, if you think of yourself as a victim, you disempower yourself. It's a negative thing. You have to rise above it.
But even as a child, you see, I disassociated my stomach with myself. So I'd say, oh, my tummy's very bad today. Oh, I've got a bad tummy. In fact, I hear people today say, oh, my back's bad.
Yeah.
We blame that part of ourselves as if it's not us at all. Then the power struggle begins, I think. If only my stomach would behave itself. And why are you doing this to me now? You know, of all these times that you need to go to the loo, why now?
So you're not really nurturing that part, are you?
Of course you're not. You're having a war inside yourself.
Yeah.
And I've learned through my counselling and speaking to wonderful, wonderful people who want to change their circumstances and themselves, and by listening to my own body, that if we can step out of that victim mindset and, I'm not going to say make peace with ourselves, but connect with our body, accept our situation and what we can and can't do about it. I find it's empowering, like you say, but also we can change the way we think, and that's the only thing we can change. When you're born with a physical disability, physical disability, you have to accept that this is what you've got.
Yeah.
And the only thing you can change is the way that you cope with it.
Yes.
And think about it. And I find asking myself questions, special questions, can really wake myself up from this poor me syndrome. Oh no one's gonna love me because I'm like this.
Yes.
What are they gonna think? And it really has helped me to cope. and the feeling of feeling safe. You know, it's very ironical that I was born with a condition that makes you feel unsafe every single day.
Oh, I can imagine. Absolutely.
And yet, I know I am safe.
Yeah.
Spiritually, I've always felt protected, but I know I can cope.
Yes.
Partly this comes from my mother, who has always told me I can cope.
Yeah.
As well as being told I'm loved.
Yeah.
Which I think is incredibly, incredibly important for any child to hear. But looking back at my history, I have coped.
Mm.
And I will cope. It might not be the way I want to cope, or I'd like to be able to cope, but I am going to cope.
So what are people going to get out of reading your book, Chrissy?
Right. Well, I've used this set of questions that the conologist gave me. And I've used every question as a chapter in my book. And I've looked at this question and I've written about how I have dealt with this question in my life. And at the end of the chapter, I have a series of questions for the reader to wake themselves up from the victim mindset if they also suffer with a disability of any kind. It doesn't have to be incontinence. Mm. It could be any kind of physical disability, and shown them how they can help themselves.
Yeah. Yes. I've always found in life that if you think things are bad and then you hear about another story and you think, my goodness, what have I got to moan about? I found your story fascinating, and I for one look forward to your book. So Kerin's editing it. Are you self-publishing or what? What's
happening? Yes, self-publishing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what we can do about getting the word out there.
Thank you.
But once again, I don't know if Kerin told you, but my final question, Chrissy, is if there was a referendum tomorrow on the EU, leave or stay, how would you vote? And remember that this is probably the most powerful cross that you'll ever have in your lifetime. It's so important. So, how would you vote?
Hmm.
And that's put you on the spot.
It has, because I don't focus very much on politics, other than the fact that I don't trust anybody or any system, government system at all. However, what little knowledge I've gained, I guess I'm going to say out.
Well, when you say about not trusting and all the rest of it, but I think the most important thing I would say is this, that we as people of this great country need to be able to trust ourselves, that we can govern ourselves, keep our sovereignty, and not rely on unelected bureaucrats over there to decide how we live our lives. And on that note, I'm going to say thank you, Chrissy. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. An incredible story. And I hope that you get the word out there and help other people, because it won't be just about your particular thing, which obviously you wouldn't sell many books if it was just to people like you. So you know, lots of people out there, I'm sure they're going to find it fascinating. And as I say, I'll be the first to buy your book. But thank you for your time.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you very much. Okay. Well, everybody, that was an awful lot to take in, wasn't it? Anyway, there will be pictures on the blog, and any questions or anything, you can always get back to me, Vanessa, at Radio Free UK. And on that note, once again, have a fabulous day. Until the next time. Thank you. Bye.